Beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the 9th of December, 2005, this is the Rain Report. I'm George Bowen, W2XBS, from This Week in Amateur Radio. 5 years ago, Rain founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with a gentleman at the Dayton Hamvention named Michael Krestahl, W1RC. Michael was deeply involved at the time in working with the United States government to remove some surplus radio gear from its demilitarization list.
Each piece of equipment that the military and the government owns has a what's called a demil code. And that code dictates what will happen to that item when it is no longer needed by the government. Now, this policy of just demilitarizing or totally destroying equipment without concern as to what the equipment actually was capable of doing, it seems to have begun around 1994. It was a policy first established by the State Department, which was then adopted by other government agencies. The rationale being was to keep the equipment out of the hands of terrorists. Now, this is very weird considering the sheer size, weight, and power requirements of much of this U.S. surplus stuff versus what you can buy over the counter, both here and overseas, using today's technologies. Now, I was told off the record that part of it stems from a CIA report claiming that the United States military communications equipment was showing up in use by unfriendly nations after being sold by the DRMO, which is the U.S. government agency that's responsible for disposing of excess equipment. To be more specific, a quantity of equipment was traced from Cuba to a certain well-known Canadian electronic surplus dealer, and some of this equipment wound up in China. It was also traced back to that source. Now, a series of articles in an issue of the U.S. News and World Report about 3 years ago attempted to claim that private citizens were buying high-tech military arms as surplus, as were Chinese agents. There was even a story claiming that some farmer out in Wyoming had bought a completely functional Apache gunship helicopter with all arms intact and was using it to shoot coyotes on his ranch. A number of congressmen saw a publicity opportunity here and started screaming for DRMO to demil everything, and we are now seeing the results.
We hear all the time about the various weapons falling in the wrong hands, or unfriendly hands, shall we say. And so what's new about happening with radio equipment as well? That's nothing new.
Well, no, it's nothing new, but apparently it became something of an issue when it started turning up in the hands of our enemies. After all, this stuff usually ends up on the market for pennies on the dollar. It's the highest technology available. And do we really want to subsidize other countries that may not be friendly to us by giving them our cast-offs, as it were?
Well, now, the highest technology available, surely we're not referring to the radio gear, some of which goes back to World War II or the 50s and 60s.
Absolutely, and this is why this whole thing was totally ridiculous. The R390 receiver, for example, which is possibly the most popular piece of military and government surplus equipment that's being used today by radio amateurs and shortwave listeners, is an example. It was manufactured by a number of different contractors. It was designed by Collins Radio Company of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, in the early 1950s. There was a time in 1968 when there was a surplus of them at the manufacturer, and they were actually offered for sale to the general public through an ad in CQ magazine. The price in 1967 or 68 for that radio was $1,700. But the thing that really was interesting was that they were destroying a set called the FRC-93. The FRC-93 was actually a Collins KWM-2A with a 30L1 amplifier and the station console and the power supply. This is all for HF. Now, this particular station, when new, was available through any amateur radio store that was a Collins dealer. It was not classified. It was not high-tech technology. It was just a good radio that worked well in the military, and the government wanted it. So there was absolutely no security risk whatsoever by having this radio available, since it was available in the 60s when it was new by anybody that wanted to buy one. They were destroying them anyways. A friend of mine had mentioned in about the mid-90s that the numbers of R390s and 398s that were getting out on the surplus market had dropped off drastically. In fact, none were getting out. And this was quite alarming because they were popular and people wanted them. And then he had heard stories that they had been demilitarized, generally with a sledgehammer. They just smash it, or they would drive a bulldozer over it. People have told me that they have had experiences in the military where they've seen forklifts smashing things. Somebody told me that they saw some folks down in Virginia unbox a brand new pair of Tektronix spectrum analyzers worth in the five figures and just smash them with the tines of a forklift.
How much of this equipment really is left to be demilitarized anymore?
That's a very good question, Hap. The answer is we just don't know. However, the reason that it was important to try to get this changed was they have a lot of stuff stored away in underground bunkers. In fact, during the Gulf War, they had to very quickly take out of mothballs Collins KWM-2s and R-390s and 51S-1s and ship them over to Saudi Arabia because the current radio at the time was a Harris. It was breaking down in the desert, not because of anything with the radio, but it used a fan and a forced air cooling system, and the filters were being quickly blocked up by all the sand that they have in the environment there, and these radios were not very usable, so they had to go back to 1950s technology to get some basic communications equipment running over there. I expect that they still have numbers of them. They found a lot of this stuff in Europe after the Berlin Wall came down, and we didn't have to establish all these elaborate monitoring posts along the so-called Iron Curtain. They say that they found thousands and thousands of R-390As and radios of that particular class over there. In fact, some BC-610 transmitters and T-368 transmitters, which are a 500-watt class AM and CW and radio teletype transmitter for the HF bands. Beautiful equipment. There's nothing finer if you want a good AM transmitter or a good CW transmitter than a T-368. The current value of those is $1,000 to $2,000.
You're listening to an interview with Michael Krestall, W1RC, discussing issues surrounding the so-called demilitarization of surplus radio gear by the U.S. government. This is the RAIN Report.
You're listening to the RAIN Report from www.rainreport.com.
You go on eBay and see what some of that stuff is going for, and it boggles the mind that people are paying several thousand dollars, but of course it's all predicated upon the condition. Now, most of the military stuff and the government stuff is not in first-rate condition. In fact, some of it's been repainted, and you know when the military paints stuff, they don't do a particularly good job. They just, you know, spray it. And so a lot of this stuff is not high-dollar stuff, but yet it's still a good utilitarian radio. Now, I picked up a KWM-2A at the Gaithersburg Hamfest back in the early 90s. It was missing all the crystals, but it was a late-model KWM-2A in nice, clean condition for $150. Now, that radio has got to be worth about $1,500 to $2,000 because I put crystals in it, and obviously I've repaired it. But the average one, I would say, would be worth $300, $400. The 30L1 amplifier, which is an excellent amplifier that uses 4A11As and grounded grid, good general-purpose 1,000-watt amplifiers. Good, clean ones have always gone for, you know, $500, $600, $650. So these ones were worth $300, $350. They weren't, you know, pretty to look at in a lot of cases, but they worked.
Those of us who have been around for 30 years in ham radio used to find lots of surplus equipment, the old ARC-5 receivers that covered 3 to 5, 6 to 8 megahertz. But it was amazing, all the used gear from the military that you could find all over back then. And today, unfortunately, the new ham who's looking to get a decent station on the air of surplus gear isn't as likely to find that stuff around.
They may find it around, but they'll find it at a vintage radio show and they'll find big bucks on it. I've seen command set receivers and transmitters, the ARC-5s that you just mentioned, sitting in boxes, brand new, for $100. Every once in a while you find one in a box that has never been taken out. Now, those radios were all very heavily modified. First of all, they used to sell them for a dollar back then, and you have to modify them, and you have to work on them, and you have to know a little bit about how the radio worked.
Weren't they 28 volts?
Well, a lot of them were 28 volts, but they were dynamotor driven, and a lot of guys took off the dynamotor and built a power supply to fit on the little shelf where the dynamotor plugged in. AM and CW. In fact, if you listen around 3579, which is the color burst frequency on 80 meters, you'll hear people running this stuff because that's a very popular frequency because the the crystals are very plentiful.
Have you had any luck in persuading anyone that can do something about this?
Actually, I was very fortunate, and I did have some luck. I called the DRMS, which is the headquarters for the DRMOs throughout the country, in Battle Creek, Michigan, and spoke to their media information officer. We were very interested in knowing why the government was destroying all these old Collins radios that had no strategic value whatsoever. And I followed it up with a letter, and then back in October of 1999, I got a letter back from them, and it says, "This memorandum is in response to your concerns about the unnecessary demilitarization of Collins radios by our defense reutilization and marketing offices at DRMOs. We coordinated with the appropriate Department of Defense officials and determined that the stock numbers that you identified in your inquiry no longer require demilitarization. We have modified the demil coding in our mechanized system that the DRMOs use for processing property to reflect the no demil requirement for the following stock numbers for the FRC-93. Additionally, there are four NSNs, which stands for national stock numbers, for the R390A, which, while not requiring demil, must be altered prior to turn-in to the DRMOs. That means that the meters have to be removed because the needles are radioactive. And then they said that these stock numbers are assigned DMIL code F, which means that the meters have to be removed. But this was a very interesting letter because it showed that when they re-examined these things, just as they could assign a DMIL code to have them destroyed, they could assign one that it would no longer require demilitarization. So after I received this letter, I contacted them. In fact, they were very kind. They gave me a point of contact and a phone number. I called the point of contact and introduced myself and said, "Look, there are other items that you may wish to consider." We decided that we would submit some more numbers. So I formed a group called the DMIL Special Task Force, and I invited members of the vintage radio and the vintage military radio communities to participate, because what we had to do was to look up the national stock numbers for all these radios so we could submit them and they could check to see what the DMIL coding was and to try to get it changed. And I'm very happy to report in the last year that we've changed the DMIL coding on over 50 pieces of equipment to DMIL coding A, which now means no DMIL required.
Are these all Collins?
No, they're not. Some of the items are made by General Electric. We've had the DMIL coding changed on the T-368 transmitter, which is now also DMIL coding A, no DMIL required. Some of the radios are made by other companies, such as Hammerland. They manufactured a radio called the Super Pro, the SP200 and the SP600, which are excellent receivers. Those have also had their DMIL codings changed, although, quite frankly, did concentrate initially on the equipment that was made by Collins and part of that FRC-93 station that I mentioned to you earlier.
Where can someone learn more about this stuff and the availability of it?
You mean the availability of the surplus equipment?
Yes.
There's a company, I think they're in Tucson, Arizona, called Levy Latham. Levy Latham is a government contractor, and their contract is to sell stuff off on behalf of the DRMS. They hold auctions on the Internet, and you can buy stuff by bidding for it on the Internet. And there's also some of the AM and vintage radio websites that are on there that you could find by searching. What I would suggest, if they're interested in military surplus equipment, is to go to the source, go to Mecca, which is called Fair Radio Sales in Lima, Ohio. These guys have been selling surplus equipment over 50 years, and they have R390As. They have all kinds of good stuff. Their prices are reasonable, and they're fine people to do business with.
That was Michael Krestall, W1RC, talking about the challenges radio collectors have faced for over a decade in persuading the U.S. government to remove much sought-after surplus radio gear from its demilitarization list. This interview originally aired in late 2000. Now, for RAIN founder-producer Hap Holly, KCNRP, I'm George Bowen, W2XBS, from This Week in Amateur Radio in snowy upstate New York, bidding you very 73 from RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2005, RAIN, all rights reserved.